I welcome you with all my heart. What can I tell you that you do not already know? I can only give my own confession. When I use the pronoun I refer to omnipresence. So when I make my confession, I do not speak of myself. It involves all of us. I am as consciousness. Consciousness is omnipresence. When I say, I am that I am, it means in reality, we are nothing but pure consciousness. It's like a chalkboard. You may draw pictures on a chalkboard of Indians, and they're fighting the cowboys. But what happens to the chalkboard? Nothing. You can erase that picture and draw another picture. This time you're drawing the beach and the sun and the sand. And it's a beautiful balmy day, about 75 degrees. What happens to the chalkboard? Nothing. Now you erase that and you draw a storm, a hurricane. People are getting blown away. Winds 90 miles an hour. What happens to the chalkboard? Nothing. This is true of our lives. Whatever you experience you're going through, whatever the experience may be, I can assure you it has absolutely nothing to do with you. Whether you're going through a horrendous experience, a beautiful experience, you are like the chalkboard. It is only a picture, a play on consciousness. You are free. You are bright and shining all the time, like the sun. Sometimes the clouds cover the sun. Do you say there's no sun? When the clouds dissipate, the sun shines once again in all its glory and splendor. So, when you appear to have problems, whatever they may be, do not go about trying to solve your problems like everybody else. But rather remove the clouds of darkness. Allow the clouds to dissipate. How do you do that? By quieting the mind. When the mind is quiet, the sun of your heart will shine once again, and you will be free of problems. I am that. I am that absolute reality that was never born and will never cease to exist. I am pure intelligence, the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I am empty space, nirvana. I am Satchitananda. Being, existence, bliss. I am bliss consciousness. Water cannot drown me. Fire cannot burn me. I have always been, and will always be. This is the truth. It is unchanging, like a chalkboard. No matter what pictures appear, it has absolutely nothing to do with me. I abide in the Self. The Self is my protection. The Self is myself. I may appear to have a body, a mind, but this is an untruth. This is hypnosis, mesmerism, illusion, Maya. In reality, I am not the body or mind. I am not the doer. I am pure consciousness, absolute reality, power Brahman. That is the truth. Somebody called me this morning. She isn't here today. She wanted me to say something about spiritual healing. Think about that. Spiritual healing. Who has to be healed spiritually? Who can tell me? That's the answer, that's right. There is no one who needs spiritual healing. But in our delusion, we see a different picture. People tell me, well, Christ healed people. How come? How come? I don't know. Because he felt like, I guess. That was his dharma. But did you ever wonder what happened to those people after they were healed? Take, for instance, Lazarus that he brought back from the dead. To begin with, Lazarus was about 50 years old. And in those days, to live to 50 years old was like 90 years old today. He was considered old. So when he brought him back from the dead, how long did he live after that? Did he live forever? A year? A month? A day? Nobody knows. Do people heal from blindness, leprosy, or whatever? How long do they stay healed? He said, go and sin no more. Meaning, do not keep thinking the way you're thinking. Because it is your mind that caused your so-called problem. Of course, they didn't understand what he's talking about. And you can't change your mind so fast. So apparently they reverted back to their sickness. So it would seem. If you abide in the Self, there is no one that has to be healed. There's another story about Ramana Maharshi. One of his female disciples, who had been with him for about 40 years or so. She was a devotee. Was lying and living in the house of a disciple. Remember the difference between a disciple and a devotee. A disciple is someone who occasionally comes to the meetings and reads all kinds of materials and gets confused. and goes to 100 different meetings a week and never practices anything. That's a disciple. A devotee is someone who stays with the meeting or with the person and lives for that meeting and for that teaching. So anyway, this devotee was in bed dying of cancer. And the disciple was taking care of her. And she said to her, "Look what's happening to you." And she started crying. "Is this what Bhagavan has done to you? If this is Bhagavan, then I don't want any part of him." This is the disciple talking. "Look at you, you're emaciated. Your skin and bones, you're dying. How can this happen to you? You were such a devotee of Bhagavan for 40 years. Hearing this, the devotee shut up in bed, so she sat up fast. And she said, "You fool. Is this what Bhagavan means to you? It is your mind that sees this picture. I am not dying. How can I die? It is you who see this picture. That's why you cry. You think I am a body, and you feel sorry for the body. So you become upset with Bhagavan and me and yourself. Can't you see that I am not the body? There's no one to be sick. There's no one to die." And she had a beautiful look and a smile on her face. And with that, she lied back down and she left her body. And she had the most gracious look, a beatific look and a smile. When Bhagavan heard the story, he said, "She's not coming back. She's emancipated." What do we see? When we look at the world, do we see lack, limitation, man's inhumanity to man? Do we see sickness, poverty, wars? Or do we see love, harmony, peace, joy? What we really see is ourselves. If you become hurried and worried, and you're always believing something negative is going to come your way, and you're always making plans ahead of time to save yourself, you're really killing yourself. You do not understand that your mind has created that picture for you. And the way to handle it is not to try to improve the condition, but to slow down your mind, to make the mind quiescent, quiet, still, peaceful, placid. When the mind becomes placid and quiet and still, divine harmony automatically ensues. Every negative condition you see in the world is a lie. Every positive condition you see in the world is a lie. Reality is beyond positive and negative. Why do you see these things? Why do you worry and fret about your life or about the life of someone else. What can possibly happen to you? Where can you go? Who suffers? Only the body, ego, mind suffers. To the extent that you can realize that you are not the body, ego, mind, to that extent you become totally, absolutely free. I think I told you the story about when I was with Neem Karoli Baba. And one of his devotees came to him and said, "Master, my husband is dying. Only you can save him." And he was a funny old guy. He looked around and he said, "Me? I can save him?" He looked at those devotees. And he said, "What should I do?" And his devotee said, "Go save him." So he said, "Okay." So we all trudged a mile down the road to a little shack. And there was her husband in bed with candles all around him, lying there. Neem Karoli Baba looked at him. And as he was looking, the candles started flickering. And they went out. So Neem Karoli Baba started to run back to his ashram. And everybody ran with him. When he got back there, they asked him, "Master, why did you run away? What happened?" And he turned around and said, "Ah, God wants him to die." And that was the end of that. In other words, what a person's dharma is going to happen. But you have absolutely nothing to do with it. That includes yourself. Whatever your body is going through has been preordained before you took on the so-called body. And your body is going to go through whatever it has to go through. You have to realize that you are not the body. And you have absolutely nothing to do with it. To the extent that you realize this truth, to that extent will you become happy and peaceful. And you will stop worrying and fretting and stop trying to change things. You will be peaceful by yourself, at home, wherever you are. You will be in the world and not of the world. So spiritual healing is a lie because it presumes somebody is sick or somebody is out of sorts or somebody is suffering from something, whether it's depression or lack of companionship, whatever it may be. This is all a lie. And you have to start knowing the truth. Looking to yourself. This doesn't mean that you should sit down and do nothing. It means whatever your body is meant to do, it's going to do, even though it doesn't exist. Your body is really your Atman. It is pure consciousness. It is absolute reality. And this is what your body is. This is the reason why you should never put yourself down and call yourself names and think you're bad or you're weak or there's something wrong with you. you are not what appears. When you make statements like that, negative statements about yourself, what you're really doing is you're getting pulled back into Maya, deeper and deeper and deeper, into illusion, into body-mind consciousness, into the dream. And the dream becomes more real for you. And you get caught up in it completely. It's like you're watching a movie. And instead of watching, you jump into the screen and want to play with part of the movie. And you forget that you're not part of the movie, but you start acting out the movie. Until you get so caught up in it that you actually think you're in the movie. That's how it is now. Think about yourselves and the so-called experiences that you're going through. How deep are you caught up in them? Think. You can tell by the way you feel. If you fear, if you have doubts, apprehension, suspicion, then you know that you're really caught up in your slime. I'm thinking of the green slime I drink every morning. So you say, well, what about you? You drink green slime, how come? Well, what I do every morning, I just get up, spontaneously I throw everything in the blender. I don't think about it. When it's making me sick or well or whatever it's doing. And I mix it all together. And then I pour it on the granola and I eat it. I happen to enjoy the taste. Or I wouldn't eat it. I wouldn't do it if I didn't like it. But when I'm finished, that's the end of it. I don't think about it, I don't condemn it or justify it. I just do it. So I go about everything that way, spontaneous. Now you think, if you think about that you are not the body, your body will not function properly, or you will get into trouble. You only get into trouble when you're putting on an act. In other words, when you're pretending to be spiritual. But when you're a real devotee of truth, of the self, automatically your body, so-called, is well taken care of. You have intuition. It comes by itself. You don't even know it's intuition. You do the right things for all concerned. And it happens by itself. And it can be real funny, like this story I'm going to tell you. There was once a real cheapskate. Real cheap. Had millions of dollars. But always cried poor mouth. Couldn't afford bus fare, so he walked. Couldn't afford to buy a glass of lemonade. So he was thirsty. Real cheap. I'm sure you know people like that. Well, he got old and was about to die. And he had guilt feelings. Because he never helped anybody else with his money. He just hoarded it and had millions of dollars saved in the banks. But he believed in heaven and hell. So he got worried about this. So what should I do? He consequently sent for a priest, a minister, and a rabbi. And he thought about this and he said, listen, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you each $3 million. If you pray for me, you go to heaven. they all talked about it. They looked at each other and they said, well, $3 million, not bad. I said, okay, we'll do it. So he mailed it as well, and they all signed it. 6 months later, the priest, the rabbi, and the minister received a notice that the guy was dying, was going to die. They went to the side, and he looked at them, and he said, okay, I'm going to give you the money. But he started to think about this. And a thought came to him, and the thought said, what if they discover something to bring me back from the dead years from now? And I'll be cured and healed. I won't be dead anymore. So I give them my money now. I won't have anything when I come back. But then he wasn't sure, so he said, okay, here's what I'll do. I'll give you each $5 million instead of three, with this condition. When I die and you file past my coffin, you each have to drop $1 million in the coffin. So if I come back and they discover something to cure me and bring me back from the dead, I'll have a nice amount of money. So they all looked at him like it was crazy. And they talked it over and they said, well, what the heck? $4 million is better than nothing. And they agreed. He finally died. And he had a funeral and his casket was laid open. And everybody filed past and they looked. The minister filed back past the coffin and looked down at him and he said, well, you son of a bitch. I know what I'm doing and what you're going to do with the money, but a promise is a promise. And he threw $1 million in the coffin. Next, the priest came by. And he said, well, this is all crazy. But this is what you want, okay. And he threw $1 million in the coffin. Now the rabbi watched all this. And he said, there must be some solution to this. And he was going to Yanomami meetings, the rabbi. And he was working from his intuition. So he filed by and looked at the money in the casket. He took out his checkbook and wrote a check for $3 million and picked up the $2 million in cash. And he said, when they find a cure for you, you can cash your check. And isn't this like us? We always imagine somebody's going to heal us. We go and see all these healers, psychics, channelers, everybody in town. We want advice from our psychic readings. We want to know what's going to happen to us. What can possibly happen to you if you were never born to begin with? You have no history. You are pure consciousness. Forget about aliens. Forget about psychics. Forget about readers and channelers. Look to yourself for the answers. Everything is within you. Learn to be still. Find out who is worried, who fears, who's unhappy, who's depressed, who's sick. And you will say, I am, but who am I? And follow the eye to its source. and the eye will disappear of its own accord. The realization will come that you are absolute reality and that all is well and everything is unfolding as it should. Govinda and Gopala are different names for Krishna. Gopala is baby Krishna. There's only one reason why people suffer, and that is because they identify with the body mind phenomena. That is the only reason, there is no other reason. I know you can give me a lot of reasons, but they're not real. If you take your mind off your body, and then you get rid of your mind completely, who is left to suffer? And you must ask yourself, who sees the suffering? I do. Well, who is the I that sees that suffering? Find out. Follow the I and see who suffers. Any questions about that? Any questions about anything? Remember, I am not a lecturer.
What does it mean to follow the I?
It means to abide in yourself. The I is yourself. It starts out as the ego, but as you follow the I, it becomes yourself. And yourself has no existence. Therefore, it becomes no thing. Emptiness, space. Like the blackboard, the chalkboard. Everything happens around it, on it, but it itself is not affected. That's what it means to follow the eye. The eye becomes yourself, and you abide in yourself.
Self-inquiry, that will further explain following the
eye. Well, they know
self-inquiry. Pardon?
They know about self-inquiry.
They do. Okay.
Don't you?
You understand how self-inquiry
is going to
see eye.
I have a
sense of that egolessness in everything.
Huh?
Egolessness in all things.
Egolessness, exactly. There is no cause for existence. If there is no cause for existence, there is no cause for suffering or for anything else. It simply has no cause.
Okay.
It didn't come from anywhere. History is like a dream that never existed. When you go back into egolessness, everything that's been troubling you becomes transcended, and you're at peace with yourself in the world. For the realization becomes that you are the world, you are the universe. The whole universe emanates out of your mind. And when your mind stops, the universe stops, and there's only the self. The self appears as bliss consciousness, as I am. And that's your real nature.
Until we come to that realization, then we don't know the self. Is that true?
No, it's not true. You always know the self. Except you won't admit it. You want to admit something else. You are confessing that you don't know the self. But it's not true. Just let go of all your doubts, and the self will shine once again. Do not believe that you don't know the self. Don't question it too much. Realize it. Become it. And put your thoughts at rest. I am the self that has always existed and will always exist. It will never cease to exist. I am pure intelligence, absolute reality, consciousness, emptiness, space. I am that I am. That's your real nature. Confess that to yourself. Do not tell yourself that you're not the self, because you're lying. It's like saying there's no sun because the clouds are covering the sun. And you're swearing up and down to me, look, Robert, there's no sun. The sun doesn't exist. But if I take you up in an airplane, above the clouds, there's the sun. It's the same thing with us. We're so covered with delusion that we believe we're not the self. Be still. And know that I am God. Therefore, you just have to be still long enough and know. And all will be well.
But until then, do we know?
Until when?
Until then.
There's no then. There's no time that you are not the self.
So when we are asleep, though, see, I've been examining this. And when we are asleep, the self is no different.
The I am is always the same. Because when you get up, you say, I slept. Who slept? I dreamt.
But I seem to be identifying I am with consciousness. And we spoke of consciousness before. Say, for instance, the self in between thoughts, the I am, that is consciousness. Yet when I sleep, there's no consciousness, there's nothing. No I am, there's nothing.
You think there's nothing.
Right.
But when you get up, you say, I slept. I was always present. I am is always present, even when you're sleeping, except you're not conscious of it.
So when you become realized, though, you are conscious even when you sleep.
Exactly.
A yogi is conscious of dreaming and of dreaming within the dream.
So until we're realized, see, I'm trying to make a connection of the self. And so I say, well, when I'm asleep, I'm not aware of the self. So when I'm awake, am I aware of the So I'm trying not to delude myself.
What you should rather do is say, when I am asleep, who is aware of the self? Ask yourself that question. When I sleep, who is aware of the self? And you'll realize I am. You are always aware of the self, except when you sleep. You're not conscious of it. But it still goes on.
Robert, is it because when you're asleep, the consciousness is not associated with the physical brain? Is that it?
No. The physical brain has nothing to do with it. When you're asleep, you're dreaming just like when you're awake. This waking state is like a dream state. So we don't say it's because we're associating with the brain. It's because we're deluded into believing that we are not the self. So you make it simple. The brain has nothing to do with it because the brain is part of the body. If the body does not exist, neither does the brain. So when you're sleeping, the brain is at rest, the body is at rest. But you're still abiding in the self. You're always abiding in the self, except you're not conscious of it.
What happens to the consciousness?
Nothing. It's still there. Except just like now. Let's take the waking state. You're saying, what happens to reality while I'm awake? Reality is still there. But you still believe in the body and the mind. And just like I give you the example of the sky is blue. In reality, there's no sky and there's no blue. So in reality, there's no body and there's no one to be unconscious.
When you abide in the consciousness in the waking state, will that help you to actually be conscious of the sleep, the deep sleep state also?
Yes, it will. Because there's only one state.
Because in some of the Ramana books it says that when you're abiding in the self more and more, your deep sleep will be conscious.
Yes.
One time I was in deep sleep and I was aware, I was actually conscious that I was deep asleep. And it was like being in a cave. There's like awareness. It was very strange.
That's a good sign. That's how it is. When you become realized,
it was like a very sweet bliss, not a powerful ecstasy, but a kind of like a background kind of just a vague but very sweet bliss, and it was like being in a cave. It looked like a cave, and it was like asleep while awake.
Well, those are just pictures you drew for yourself. But when you awaken, you will be awakened to three states, sleeping, dreaming, and waking.
So if we can hold on to this position of consciousness that we have at satsang, if we can maintain that pure consciousness without adding the whole mind to it and be established in that, then that's
abiding in the eye. Exactly.
So that's all it is, really.
That's all it is.
Right this minute, we're that, if we don't add the whole me on top of it.
Exactly, son. You don't put yourself down. Do not say, I am not conscious of myself. I don't know who I am. Mm. Realize the truth like you just said.
And yet, if this moment we're abiding in the self without the mind, we can't say that we're God-realized. Because there's a certain process that happens that actually, right?
It's better to say nothing.
Yeah, it's because there is a process that happens as a person establishes in that something happens.
Every time you say, I am not God realized, you pull yourself backwards. But like Narada said, don't fool yourself. So you have to walk the middle path. The razor's edge between realization and not realization.
So actually, we're just hung up with the relations of consciousness and the associations of consciousness, and we're just not being the pure consciousness without adding all those associations on top of it.
True.
That's it.
That's it.
Actually, this body mind will never abide on the self.
No, because it's false.
So when I say I am abiding in the self, or I am in that gesture, it means that I'm sort of. It's an expression rather than being.
It's an expression. It means I am. Is abiding in the self.
The I am.
The I am. Yeah. Isn't the same thing as the self. It's an expression, like you say.
So by
self, when you say I am, you're not referring to your body.
Not to your mind.
You're not referring to your mind. You're referring to yourself. It's like saying I am that I am. It's the same thing. I am abiding in the self. I am that I am. By saying these things to yourself, it pulls you closer to that state.
Yeah, it's the sort of a process of elimination of your.
You can say that.
Self, self,
that's why you shouldn't say anything negative about yourself. Never say anything bad about yourself. Always say, I am abiding in the self. I am the self. And then somebody might say to you, something inside can say, no, I'm not, because I feel problems. So you practice self-inquiry and you ask yourself, who feels these problems? To whom do they come? And go back to abiding in the self. The only reason karma exists is because you believe that you are the body. Once you realize there's no body, for whom is there karma? Karma is for the body, not for yourself. But as long as you don't believe that, then there's karma.
And Robin has explained that the self-realization gets you off the wheel.
When we are asleep, are we closer or further away?
Closer. Self-realization is just like being deep sleep. In deep sleep, only you're conscious. And you're conscious of bliss. So when you're in deep sleep, you're in bliss. But you're not conscious of it. That's all.
Now, when we're in satsang, and if we have devotional feelings, say when we come to satsang, we develop something, we attain something that we don't get when we're alone or in the world, but when we come to satsang, we feel something, a devotional feeling. Is that the self?
That's the self trying to emerge. Yes, it's the self. Try to abide in those feelings.
Yeah, when we're asleep, though, it's like without emotion.
Because you're asleep, you're not conscious.
So.
But if you are conscious, you'd be in bliss.
But it would be different than the feeling that we have.
No, it wouldn't. It would be self-realization.
In other words, the feeling that I get is kind of a love for all things. Okay, yet when I'm asleep, it's more of a, it's not like love, it's just...
How do you know?
Yeah, well, I don't.
You're asleep.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. So, but I'm trying to make a connection. Is that what the feeling is?
The feeling of love abides when you're asleep. Only you're not aware of it because you're not conscious. When you're a low mind, then you're conscious of being in sleep. And then you realize it's just called sleep. But you're in love. You're in bliss.
Now that love is the self?
The love is the self.
Now, but what comes to mind is you ask, well, who loves?
Why should you ask that?
Well, only to not delude yourself. To see, well, is this real or is this just another play of the mind?
That's only when you love your tape recorder more than anything else. So you ask yourself, who loves my tape recorder? And you realize it's your ego. And once the ego is abolished, there's only a tape recorder, period.
But even the egoic love, the egotistical love, or the love of the Atinyani for persons or objects, even that has a pinch of the love of the self.
Yes, it does. Exactly. Whatever you do in life, even a crook or a bank robber is really trying to find himself. That's why he does those things. We're all inadvertently searching for the self, and we don't know it.
So every desire, which is attraction, means self-esteem.
Yes. Every desire, every urge, as a search for the self. But we're misdirected.
Instead of inquiry, what you do is you go deep, down home.
You go beyond the conscious. And you jump deep like you're diving in an ocean. You dive deeper and deeper and deeper till you make contact.
Very real.
What's reality? That's good.
About when the Jnani talks about omniscience, says I'm omniscient. The Jnani has a concept about omniscience, and it's a mundane type of omniscience. Say, well, if Jnani says that he's omniscient, he must know everything. He must know about all the mundane knowledge. That's not what's implied in these statements by the Jnani, right?
You're right. Omniscience for the Jnani is being in everything, but not necessarily knowing what's going on in China. That's a different kind of omniscience.
Because people are attributing nowadays omniscience, let's say, to the channelers or to the
agents
we are channeling. They are very knowledgeable and sort of they touch that's a form of omniscience. But that's not what we can.
That's a limited form of omniscience.
Yeah.
Does omniscience mean the same as
omnipresence? Omniscience is all knowing. All knowing. Omnipresence is the same thing, really. It's all presence. You're everywhere present. The other is like omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence. All power, all knowledge, all like being everywhere at the same time.
So, like you said, it's not necessarily knowing what's going on in China, but it's knowing that all the oneness of all.
Yes. It's like you become the rock, but you're asleep in the rock, because the rock has no power to move. But you become the rock.
When you are in the presence, you are the rock. I don't quite understand.
You become a rock, but you're not aware of it. You just have pure unconscious awareness.
So you're not aware of anything. Exactly. You don't know anything.
You're on the right track. You're just being, pure being, absolute being. You're everything. It's something like when you're asleep and you expand yourself in a dream. And in the dream, you know what's going on in the dream. But you're asleep. So with the Jnani being omnipresent, omniscient, you are everything. But you're not aware of everything.
You're aware of being.
You're aware of being, just being.
Is there a way to be aware of everything as well?
As long as you're carrying a body, you won't be aware of anything because your mental process won't allow that to happen.
Besides, it seems like if you're aware that anything is
an
illusion,
what would
be
aware? When you drop your body, it's a little different. When you drop your body, it's a little different. You'll explain a little bit more.
Okay. Robert, how come the Buddhists say that the Vedanta is deluded because they're looking for the Brahman and the self, and that there's no Brahman and no self, and they use different terminology. So is there a emptiness of all things the same as the self or the capital? Mm-hmm.
They're right, because there is no Brahman, there is no self. Those are just words to describe it.
It's easy to confuse the ego self with the real self.
That's why we're discussing. Because the ego self is the I. And when the I disappears, it becomes the I am. And the I am is pure emptiness. Nirvana.
When you said the best way to help other people is to know the self. Well, when you know the self, you become the other people.
Yeah. And you realize that you are there.
Yeah. So that's what I was trying to get at earlier. You know, what is the self? What is the self that we must know? And it seems like sometimes I know what it is and then I forget. And now it comes back to me that I feel that if I have a feeling of love, it's like it becomes expansive and I can understand what it means. You become everything. Or everything becomes you, or whatever it is.
So is self-realization the awareness of the oneness of everything?
Always remember.
Never mind.
Said more.
Okay. Always remember, if you know what it is, it's not that. Because the finite mind cannot know. It's beyond the finite. So when you think you know, ask yourself, who knows? And you go back to your ego again. Only the ego knows.
But what if you say, who knows?
That's good.
what about a realized being that whoever comes into before them, so to speak, they can know everything about them. Okay? Not only that, what their self is, because it's the same as their own self, but their aggregates, you know, their ego.
You don't have to be a realized being to do that.
Yeah, I realize that. So take a being who's considered to be realized, and also that happens for this being. So he can remark when it's spontaneous, okay, something about that being that maybe will turn them towards the spiritual path.
But a pure realized, a true realized being does not need to do that. By his very presence, changes take place.
But not everyone is so receptive or open.
It's just like grace. God's grace is always available. But only some people pick it up. The same thing.
So sometimes that grace, to me, seems to be extended. There's some action that can be done that that person can understand more than just subtly. And it may not take effect then, it may take effect in that person's life 6 months, a year down the road.
That's possible. But again, a realized being does not interfere in anybody's karma. If they're prepared and they're ready, they become realized also by the very presence. It's like Ramana again, we'll go back to Ramana. People used to come to him from far and wide and say, I looked at your picture and I healed myself, you healed me. I made $1 million and you did it. This happened and that happened. And Ramana would look at his attendant who pulls the fan and say, why do they always tell me I did these things? I did nothing.
Yeah. But his grace might
have. That's possible. But he couldn't possibly be aware of it.
Right.
Because to be aware, there has to be somebody left to be aware.
But he could do it unaware.
Yes.
He didn't say anything to people when he came to him?
No.
Even when it's his grace, you have to understand everything is one. Mm-hmm. So,
whose grace is it?
Right, whose grace? It's you. Everything is you. And this is similar to the stories of when the person touched the garment of Jesus and was healed. And Christ always said, be it according to your faith.
Don't you think the person who wants to be healed so badly almost heals himself?
That's the whole point, is everything is the self.
It is the self.
And Ramana was the self. And they say, Ramana, you did this. And that's true because they did it themselves because they are them. Mm-hmm.
But
see,
the body, even the healing, is also within.
Well, the point is, a truly realized being does nothing.
It's not so much he's a realized being, he's a realized non-being.
Okay.
And we always think in terms of the realized being of Ramana, as if he's the body.
Yeah.
And the idea is the self is one.
Yeah.
Robert told the story of the woman.
Yeah.
And the self is one. And the healings, the self is one. And Ramana, the self is one. Everything, the self is one. And that self. See, I always try to grasp the self with my mind, and that's where I get lost. But now I know if I sink into deeper than the mind, the intuition, the heart, whatever, then I can expand. Then I say, oh, that's
it. In other words, he realized no self. He realized that he has many self, but there isn't any self. He realized nothing.
Right.
Not just any self. The whole thing dissolves in a big mystery.
Exactly.
And then whatever is going to happen is going to happen spontaneously.
Ramana was a simply humble person. People would come to him with all his problems, all their problems, all day long. Help me, please help me. You can help me to overcome this. At the end of the day, we look at his attendant and they would say, to whom should I go for help? They all come to me.
One of my favorite stories is that there was a Swami who could perform tricks or magic or whatever, and he lived near the ashram. And so a lot of people on their way to see the Swami would stop by to see Maharshi, they would just peek in at him, you know, because they'd heard about him too. And he told one of his devotees, because he had a lot of trouble with his feet, and he said, keep breathing, rubbing my feet, and they'll see that I'm just an old sick man, and they'll leave me alone.
There's nothing special about a realized being.
It seems that the little understanding and using quotation mark the grace of the young of anybody for approaches him is karmic. All karmic.
Yes.
Karmic.
Yes. That's true.
However, the fact that there is a focusing on that occasion on the service. Because the presence of the jhana, there can be maybe sort of acceleration or catalytic effect.
That's true, so.
But that also is karmic.
That's also true.
depending on the openness, the
discipline, yes.
The devotees.
Yes, the teaching is full of contradictions. That's true, you're right. All these things are true.
So when you hug that Rabba, you're really going into battle with our karma. You're in a confrontation with our ignorance. Right?
If that's what you're saying, so be it. See, this is why I emphasize over and over again, we've got to develop a great humility, a great compassion, a great love. Not play tricks and have all these siddhas, powers, and materialize all kinds of things. Anybody can learn that if you practice enough.
I just want to express these things.
Express what?
Compassion, love.
By being yourself. If you become yourself, it's automatic. If you abide in yourself, you have to have compassion and love for yourself first. And you do that by letting go of your thoughts, controlling your thoughts. And compassion and love and your mouth become by themselves. It always goes back to that again. It goes back to you. You can't develop it outside of yourself. It has to come from within yourself. It appears that the world has a very strong pull on us. And you have to try to resist that by every day practicing these things. That's why I gave you all these techniques. You have to keep remembering every day. And soon it will become automatic. I feel this is a very important meditation to help us. For what it does, it goes deep into the subconscious. And pretty soon it starts doing you, instead of you doing it. It's really helped many people to see the way. And the way you do this is you relax yourself. And with your breathing, you inhale, you say I. You exhale, you say am. Now you can also do this all day long. When you're driving your car, your bus. When you're washing dishes. When you're making supper, dinner, or breakfast. You can watch your breath and do I am with your breathing. So let's do it together. Make yourself comfortable. And you can close your eyes to remove obstructions. Acquire a good feeling in yourself. And the formal way to do it is first, you relax your body to make sure every part of you is relaxed. You can start with your knees. Relax your knees. Relax everything below your knees, your feet, your toes. Relax everything above your knees, your thighs. Relax your hips, your abdominals. Relax your chest. Relax your back, fingers, hands, wrists, forearms relax, upper arms relax, shoulders, neck, back of your neck relax, back of your head, top of your head, your forehead, your face. Every part of you is now totally relaxed. Focus your attention on your breathing. Before you do I Am, you can practice some Vipassana meditation, Buddhist meditation, where you watch your breath. Watch yourself breathing. Watch the sensations in your body. Just watch. Do not react to them. For instance, if you have a pain in your thigh, watch. Do not react to it. Observe it. And observe your breath at the same time. Do not force your breath, just breathe naturally. If you get lost in thoughts, as soon as you catch yourself, go back to your breathing. Do not become discouraged. Do not force your thoughts out. Ignore them. And go back to observing your breathing. Now you ask yourself the question, who is the observer? Who observes my breathing? Of course, the answer is, I am. Now with your breathing, start the I Am meditation. Inhale normally, say I. Exhale and say Am. With your normal breathing, do not emphasize your breath. Normal breathing, I am. I inhale, am exhale. Again, if your mind wanders, do not be mad at yourself, but gently go back to I am. And ignore your thoughts. Remember to love yourself, to worship yourself, to pray to yourself, to bow to yourself, because God dwells in you, as you. Om Shanti, peace. Happy you can come. See you again soon. That's all she wrote.